Life isn't about avoiding the bruises. It's about collecting the scars to prove that we showed up for it. Join Nikki Seberini for the next hour as she explores heroism through illness. There is a warrior inside each of us. This is LifeLinks with the DL Link. LifeLinks is a funding initiative of the DL Link.
Oh, welcome back to the DL Link show on 101.9 Chai FM, the show where we connect you through insights, information, and illumination. Just an announcement for runners and riders, or both, or just if you're a DL Link supporter, just a reminder that we're heading to the Cape Town Marathon, and that's going to be a part of the majors. And then, of course, we have coming up on the 26th of October is Ride Joburg. So, I mean, that is around the corner. So I hope that you're practicing. I hope that you're going to be joining Team DL Link. If you want to find out more information, then email events@dllink.co.za. That is events@dllink.co.za. So nuclear medicine. Wow. Looking very forward to having a conversation with Professor James Warwick. He's the executive head of the Department of Medical Imaging and Clinical Oncology in the Faculty of Medicine and Health Sciences. Professor Warwick, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Afternoon, Nikki. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, when I just look at nuclear medicine and everything that goes with it, my brain just gets really excited, but also a little bit nervous because it's quite complex. And I'm going to ask you, we're going to start off, and if you can just dumb it down for certainly someone like me, what is nuclear? And I know it's a big question. What is nuclear medicine?
Sure, I think it's a term that confuses and even scares a lot of people.
Yes.
Even amongst my colleagues, when we have reunions, some of them from med school are unsure exactly what I do. So yeah. Your position is understood. Maybe the simplest way to explain it is, you know, there are three medical specialities that use radiation. And the other two are much bigger and better known, I think. The first of those would be radiology, which is uses radiation of different kinds to image the structure of the body mostly. So whether it's CAT scans or MRI scans or even ordinary X-rays, most people are familiar with that. And that always involves some sort of radiation from the outside of the body and detection by a machine to get an image. The other one that's well known is radiation oncology, which are specialists who primarily use radiation, again, normally from outside of the body, as well as other treatment methods to treat particularly cancers. Nuclear medicine is a smaller discipline that also uses radiation, but what makes us different is we put the radiation inside of the body. So we inject patients, or we normally inject, sometimes they swallow them, sometimes they even breathe them in, but normally they're injected, a kind of drug called a radiopharmaceutical. So it's a drug, but it's radioactive. And the idea then is that the chemical that is injected into the body, depending on what it is, will then go to different functional parts of the body. So we might look at the skeleton with one, we might look for tumors with another, we might look for infections with another. And that allows us to do a different kind of imaging, what we call functional imaging. The technical terms for these are things like PET and SPECT. And that's often got the great strength that it's often extremely sensitive. We're able to pick up tiny amounts of disease, for example, with many cancers, it's able to detect disease long before the other conventional imaging is able to detect it. But then there's more, because the other thing one can do is one can also inject radiopharmaceuticals, which have a different kind of radiation on them, and that these radiations can actually be used for treatment. So what the advantage of that is, instead of radiating the body from the outside in, where normally there's some healthy tissues in the way, and they will also get some damage, collateral damage, if you like. In the case of nuclear medicine treatments that are available, you can inject it. The body's own biology will then take the radiopharmaceutical to the tumor, and then you blast the tumor from the inside out. And that often means that the side effects are much less, the treatment is much better tolerated.
Wow, you have explained that so brilliantly. Thank you, thank you. I have a much better understanding of that, Professor. So let's look at how, because I mean, for you to study something like this, as you say, I mean, even your colleagues, when you sit down and you talk about it, there's so much confusion around it. And we know that things are changing all the time, and you look at treatments and you look at technology. So in this field, are you finding that it's growing very, very fast? Is it something that you think doctors will be using more and more in the field of detection and treatment? In other words, will it become more commonly used?
I think it's fair to say that that is what we have been seeing, particularly over, let's say, the last 10 years or so. When I got into the field, I started specializing in the late 90s. It really was quite a small and niche area discipline. It remains a relatively small discipline compared to the others, for example, that I talked about a moment ago, but it's definitely growing as some newer therapies and newer imaging techniques are appearing. Their applications in many more medical problems are starting to emerge.
Wow. I mean, when you were explaining and you were talking about radiation, you were saying there are these three specialities. Now, when I think of radiation, I think of something that's negative. I see a danger associated with radiation. So once again, explaining it as, because I can tell that you explain things really well, how is it that radiation can be dangerous in terms of, you know, when you're having exposed to radiation, and yet you are able to use it not only in the detection but in actual treatment? I mean, you've explained that, you know, you're able to blast the cancer, but how do you shift radiation from being something that I perceive as being dangerous to something that's actually incredibly helpful?
So absolutely. I think you can draw a parallel to almost any other medical treatment, is nothing comes without some risk. And so in the same way that radiation, if one gets an excessive dose or an unnecessary dose, there's always going to be a risk that there's going to be some cellular damage or genetic damage that can trigger, for example, increase one's risk of getting a cancer, or if it's even a higher dose, it can damage the organs. But at the same time, you find that cancer cells, for example, are often exquisitely sensitive to radiation. So a big part of our job is to make sure that one gets that balance right, so that when you give a treatment, it's going to the benefits of the treatment are going to outweigh the risks, and that yes, there would be some small risk, but that the benefit would be so much greater, so that for a person who is, for example, sitting with a newly diagnosed tumor, using a small amount of radiation to detect that tumor better, to find out how far it spread, for example, the advantages of that, of using that small amount of radiation will far outweigh the risks of that radiation. But the risk is never zero.
Sure. Okay. And so when, Professor, would you be going for the nuclear medicine, as in for the detection and the treatment? So you spoke about new, as I said, you explained it so well, that with the radiology, it's you are I beg your pardon, the radiation oncology, it's from the outside in. So there could be more damage and there could be more side effects. Does it have to also do with the kind of cancer that you are treating? In other words, is it limited when you use nuclear medicine? Is it limited to certain cancers?
Exactly. And that is a key thing that one needs to understand, that I am certainly not at this stage able to say it is the answer to everything. Indeed, our applications are still quite niche, but they're growing. And it's not exclusively cancer. For example, some of the oldest nuclear medicine treatments, believe it or not, go back more than 80 years, from work done in the United States, when they discovered that in patients whose thyroid glands were overactive, they discovered that you could use radioactive iodine, given as an injection or as a pill, could be used then to irradiate the thyroid to make it less overactive. And they were just using the fact there that the thyroid gland, its physiology is such that it loves iodine, it grabs all iodine in our diet, and uses it to make its hormone. And so they rode on the back of that fact. And we, to this very day, we still use that therapy for patients with overactive thyroid glands. So there are specific cancers where we are starting to become involved. I think the most important that everyone will know is prostate cancer, where it indeed forms part of the treatment. It's normally at this stage, at a later stage in the disease, and it's not curative typically, but can provide a significant improvement in quality of life in patients who have more advanced disease. So it's definitely not a panacea for everything, but has some growing niche areas where it's really starting to become quite useful.
And Professor, why, if you use it at the later stage of the later development of prostate cancer, why would you be using the nuclear medicine, that treatment?
So very often in that scenario, and you know, let me preface that by saying this is an area of research, and these things may very well change in the next few years.
Yes.
But at this stage, typically these are patients who have disease that is spread, that is quite advanced, and they've often been through one or two lines of more conventional treatments. And essentially, there's nothing more that can be done for them other than just pain control. And we've seen some remarkable cases of patients at this stage who then we're able to give a radioactive radiopharmaceutical that goes and sits in the cancer cells, irradiates it from inside, is tolerated very well, and that we can significantly enhance the quality of life for these patients and extend their life very often in a situation like that.
Amazing. And so that would be the treatment. And in terms of detection, are you also limited in terms of which cancer can be detected using the radiation from inside the body?
We are, but to a lesser degree. So, you know, for example, one of the most common kinds of scan we use is it's called a PET scan. It's nothing to do with cats and dogs, but stands for positron emission tomography. And what we do there is we actually inject the patient with a very small amount of radioactive sugar, radioactive glucose. And the reason why this is useful is that many tumors really, really love sugar. They burn it for energy. And so if you give this radioactive sugar to a patient and then let them just sit in a quiet room for an hour or so, the sugar all goes and sits in areas of tumor, and then you're able to detect with exquisite sensitivity. And that is much wider than just one or two cancers, but in fact has applications in many of the common cancers that we know.
Wow. I have heard of a PET scan before. So are you finding that more and more doctors are using PET scans for detection of cancer? Are you seeing an increase in that?
Yes. Well, it's you know, oncology, the cancer medicine is quite strongly driven by international protocols. There's a continual collecting of evidence and new evidence and modification of when different treatments and also different investigations are appropriate. So the PET scans really entered the sort of conventional clinical frame in the 1990s. And initially they were only proven and used for some, you know, one or two things. Whereas nowadays there are many accepted indications for across a number of different tumors where these scans would be appropriate. And indeed, those are the situations where we will get referrals from our colleagues who are treating these patients.
Professor Warwick, how interesting, because it sounds like you really are at this cutting edge, like things seem to be shifting. As you said, there's a lot of research that is happening. I read that, you know, you studied physics and applied mathematics before you went to medical school. And so you obviously have this curiosity when it comes to this. But what do you see the future? I mean, what do you envisage? And where do you think it's going? And where would you like it to go, this nuclear medicine?
I think what really excites me about the discipline is each time one is able to discover a new molecule, which is able to either bind to a new kind of cancer or maybe tell you about a new type of information in the body, you have a whole new scan. So, or you have a whole new treatment. So, just having one kind of scan, there's actually potentially thousands of them and applications out there. And it's actually all about the molecules. There are a couple of molecules that we're aware of that are in the research space at the moment that look incredibly exciting for the detection of cancer and for the treatment of cancer. We're not there yet, but there's a lot of research going on. There's one that's called FARPI, which looks at the tissue around tumors that get fibroblasts that sit around the tumors that this FARPI sticks to, and it may be potentially very exciting. The early work certainly is very interesting, that we may have a really exciting tool, not only for imaging tumors, but also for offering potentially new treatments.
Wow, so interesting. Professor, we're going to take a break. We'll take a song break, and then we're going to be back. We had quite a few years ago, Walter, his name, and he was just such an incredible human being. He had prostate cancer. He came onto the show a number of times, and he was part of this research using nuclear medicine. And he was so generous in sharing his experience with us. He passed a few years ago, and just an incredible human being. And so I'd like to speak to that, if they can be a part of this research, if it is very much within a medical aid that you would look at the nuclear medicine, just where it is at the moment. We can discuss that after the break.
Life isn't about avoiding the bruises. It's about collecting the scars to prove that we showed up for it. Join Nikki Seberini for the next hour as she explores heroism through illness. There is a warrior inside each of us. This is Life Links with the DL Link. Life Links is a funding initiative of the DL Link.
Well, welcome back to the show on 101.9 Chai FM. I have Professor James Warwick on the show, Executive Head of the Department of Medical Imaging and Clinical Oncology in the Faculty of Medicine and Health Sciences. Professor Warwick, just before the break, I was talking about a guest who used to regularly come onto the show, and my producer just reminded me it was Walter Pike. And Walter really was an exceptional person, and we really all went on Walter's journey with him, and he was undergoing this treatment, the nuclear medicine treatment, and it was an advanced stage of his prostate cancer. And I actually came across something that he wrote, Professor. I want to just put it out there because he was so exceptional, and it's just a wonderful thing to remember Walter Pike, because he joined us so many times, and he used to write his cancer updates on social media. And one of the last ones, it said, cancer update. He said, how much time is enough? I suspect that's how much I have. Enough to do everything I should. To think, to write, to hold, to share, to ride, to teach, to care, to build, to laugh, love, and to learn. I'll have enough, I'm sure. I remember writing that down, because he made such an impact on us. So I just wanted to bring that up, if you don't mind, Professor, because he was a very special human being. And he was part of, as I said, this experimental part of the nuclear medicine. So the question is it still, if we look at medical aid and we look at the offering, we've broken it all down, but is it still very much in the research stages? So if someone is at a more advanced stage of prostate cancer, would they fall under that umbrella, or is this offered through the more conventional treatment that you could then claim via your medical aid?
Right. No, well, thanks for reading that. I mean, I think just to make the comment, first of all, that speaks so much to the fact that, life doesn't end when the cancer diagnosis is made. There can often be so much living still to do. And the quality of that life is so important. And that's where I think these kind of palliative treatments can be so useful. The good news is that many of these therapies are already available around this country. both in the private sector and even to a limited degree in the state sector where budgets allow. So that, for example, the prostate cancer therapy that Walter Pike would have had is readily available within the public sector and is indeed is covered by medical aid. So that these are already therapies that are very much in the clinical space.
Well, it's so good to hear that, you know, that's progression, things changing. That's really wonderful to hear. Professor, is there anything that we haven't covered? I mean, as we said, you know, this is a growing field. You mentioned there's so many exciting things and more research. You spoke about this new molecule and the excitement around discovering this new molecule. But is there anything that perhaps you want to share before we say goodbye to you with our audience with regards to what we've been discussing?
Well, maybe just to add the point that while we've spoken a lot about cancer, and that is important and an important part of what we do other things. So, yeah, we have investigations that are look at the functioning of the heart. We have investigations that can be useful, for example, in a number of brain conditions, such as Parkinson's disease, and in some of the diagnoses of other neurodegenerative conditions, such as Alzheimer's disease, which sometimes, even in the hands of expert clinicians, can be very tricky. And it's in a situation like that where we're also able to assist with functional imaging. Cancer is a big one, but it's not limited to that. Mm.
So interesting, Professor. Thank you so much. I really have enjoyed our conversation, and I certainly am walking away with a lot more knowledge, and I'm sure that our listeners are too. So thank you very much for joining us. It's been wonderful chatting.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, and take care. Bye-bye. Professor James Warwick, Executive Head of the Department of Medical Imaging and Clinical Oncology in the Faculty of Medicine and Health Sciences. You know, I always say this show is all about connecting you through insights, information, and illumination. And I get to learn so much, and I've learned plenty, and I hope you have too. I hope that you have enjoyed the show as much as I have. Just a reminder as well that if there were parts of the show that you weren't able to catch, you can always, the show is a podcast the next day, so you can get that podcast on the Chai FM website. Just go to Chai FM and look at podcasts, and then of course go to Thursday and Life Links, and the show will be there. And just lastly, if you want to get involved with the DL Link, if you want to volunteer, if you want to make any donations, please feel free to visit their website, which is www.dllink.co.za. That's www.dllink.co.za.